And welcome back to Street Photography Magazine. Once again, this is Bob Patterson. And our guest today is Michael Hyatt. Michael is a photographer from Tucson, Arizona, or currently residing in Tucson, Arizona. And he's also a world traveler. He's made several trips to Cuba, and I'm sure he's going to want to talk about that. So, Michael, welcome.
Great. Good to be with you, Bob.
Yeah, well, glad you're here. You know, I've been watching your work for quite a while, and I know we're going to talk about this. Michael recently came out with a street photography calendar, and he was nice enough to send one to us, and so we'll talk about that. It's really cool. But let's begin at the beginning, Michael. How did you? You're obviously an avid photographer, and you've been doing it for quite a while. So how did you get into it?
Well, I was in the Navy back in the Vietnam era. I was in Japan, and I decided I wanted to be a photographer actually in the Navy, but they said the school was full, which probably wasn't true, but they said I tested mechanically high, so they sent me to jet engine mechanic school. I ended up in a squadron of aircraft on an aircraft carrier and off to Vietnam, et cetera, and when we got done with the cruise, we stopped in Yokosuka, Japan, and I went to the PX, and I got myself a Pentax Spotmatic camera with a 50-millimeter lens and brought it home, and I got out of the Navy a few months later, signed up for college. I had the GI Bill, and my first class I signed up for was basic photography, because I had wanted to be a photographer. I'd never really done any photography to speak of as a youth, but it just intrigued me. I grew up in a family that appreciated art and music and photography, so I decided that I wanted to learn the basics, and I had a camera, and I took the class, and I was working in the audiovisual department to make a little extra money, and the dean of students asked my boss if there was anybody in the department that could take pictures in classroom settings around campus for the catalog for the next year. And I ended up with the job, which was terrific because there was a dark room right there on campus. They paid for my film and my time. And my assignment was just to go into various classroom situations or even to baseball games or whatever was happening around campus and just photograph life as it was happening, and that was really a great start. I also noticed in the library at the campus that they had Aperture magazines, so I started looking at those and discovered artists like Cartier-Bresson and Walker Evans, Dorothea Lange, and that's pretty much the beginning of my interest in photography. But once I discovered those artists, I really love the style, documentary photography, and of course Cartier-Bresson, all the great street photography he did during his career just really inspired me. So that was where it all began.
Wow. So have you been working professionally as a photographer ever since?
No, I took a few other classes in photography, lighting, things like that, and I decided that, I did some professional work, everything from weddings to baby pictures and whatever, family shots, those kinds of things. But I decided that I really wanted to do documentary photography, and there weren't a lot of ways to make money doing it. So I realized that I'm going to have to make my living doing something else. So over the years, I had various jobs, including working at a food co-op in Southern California. And then I worked, moved to Tucson, and I got involved in the community radio station and did a two-hour radio show. But I made my living selling underwriting, which is public radio speak for commercial advertising for the community radio station. And that those jobs freed me up to pursue the style of photography that I wanted to do and not have to make my living doing baby pictures and weddings and those kinds of things, which I consider pretty boring.
You know, I have to agree with you. I've done a share of that myself, and it's not the same as doing your own work for your own, I don't know, your own enjoyment.
Well, yeah, and you know, photography is an art form. We know that. You and I agree on that, and anybody else that disagrees just doesn't know what they're talking about. Art is a way that you tap into your personal experiences, your psyche, and it's creative. You make photographs. I like the fact that Ansel Adams used the term making photographs as opposed to taking photographs, because what that indicates is that it's a creative form. And if you work at it, if you learn your trade, you can make art with a camera. And that was my goal, is to make art. And hopefully after all these years, I've made a few photographs that fit in that category.
Well, you sure have. I mean, it's obvious you do street photography. You wouldn't even be on the show. But what else do you shoot?
Well, I mentioned Dorothea Lange and Walker Evans and a few others that inspired me in the early days and their documentary style. And particular the work they did for the Farm Security Administration, and that appealed to me greatly. And I was going to college. I started college in 1968, so it was during the Vietnam era. I had been in the service. I went to college. The protests against the war started really gearing up at that point. So there was a lot going on campus and throughout the nation. A lot of opposition to the war, and I started hanging out with the radicals on campus. And having been to Vietnam and seeing what it was like there, and really being opposed to what I witnessed after I'd been out, I got involved and I started photographing the protest movement. And that was one of those things that was immediate. It was there. I had friends who were involved, and suddenly I became a documentary photographer with a subject matter. So if you look at my website there in the 1969 to 84 portfolio, the first photograph is of a protest in Ventura, California. You see the marchers going down the street with a sign that says, "Give peace a chance," and there's another sign that says, "End the draft." And then on the left side of the image was a sign promoting the Marine Corps with an arrow pointing in the opposite direction and the wording, "The Marine Corps builds men." I consider that my first photograph that captures not only the time, the era that I was living in at the time, but also something very personal about me as an artist.
Why? Because you had been through that yourself?
Well, that too, but I consider the work that I do, my best work, anything that's on my website, I consider it subjective work. It's something that I've tapped into on a psychological level. I grew up in a family that was quite diverse. My parents were kind of opposite ends of the pole of politics and all kinds of things. So I always sort of got stuck in the middle of two people who were quite different. And so that image in particular, and you can see it in the image that's in the calendar, that's my photograph from Cuba, is there's a juxtaposition of contrasting elements. And for me as a photographer, as an artist, I'm out there on the street. The street is the best place to find these kinds of elements. My goal is to unite these contrasting elements into an image. I think Cartier-Bresson was terrific at that. When I was doing research for the calendar that you mentioned, I was reading Colin Westerbeck's book, Bystander, A History of Street Photography, and there's a chapter on Cartier-Bresson. And he says about him, being pulled in two different directions as an artist has created the tension that exists in his, being Cartier-Bresson's work, between background and foreground, the elegantly composed scene and the vanishing figure in it, the eternality of forms and the immediacy of action. That just rings a bell for me because I see myself in that quote. Not that I'm Cartier-Bresson, but I relate entirely to that. And that photograph from the peace movement and the Marine Corps sign is an example of those elements that I look for when I'm photographing.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, that's a lot to think about in the fraction of a second you have to make a good photograph. And how do you see all that and work the camera and compose and everything all at the same time? That's something that I struggle with all the time, and mm-hmm. It just amazes me when I see someone like yourself who is able to do it so consistently and so well. So what's the trick? I know there's no trick, but you know what I mean by that question.
Well, sure, yeah. But it begins by finding a location that's interesting. If you look at the photograph that's in the calendar of mine from Trinidad, Cuba, mm-hmm. you'll see a couple of women. When I came around the corner and spotted this building with that green door, that caught my eye immediately. And so within a minute, this woman comes up in the magenta skirt there, and she starts a conversation with her friend. And that was interesting. And then suddenly, around the corner comes this little boy, and he's in his own world. He's not paying attention to them. He's looking down the street, opposite directions, and he kind of leans and puts his hand against the building, and one foot's up in the air, and then there's that church steeple in the distance. There's the contrast of the street is lit, but where the two women are speaking are in subdued light by comparison. So it just set up a whole situation of potential. Cartier-Bresson was real good at finding a location and waiting for elements to come together. He liked to talk about geometry. I never quite related to that specifically because I was never that great at math. But in any case, he would find a location and say there was some possibilities, perhaps with not only the location, but the lighting, and there was some action coming in and out of the frame, and he would just wait until all the elements came to a four and made his photograph. Of course, he probably had hits and misses like we all do, and perhaps because you're working on an unconscious level, especially if there's a lot of action happening all around, and you're not always sure what you got when you're done photographing at a particular scene. You're hoping that all the elements came together and to make a good photograph, but you never know until you see the film. Of course, today we've got digital, and we can see pretty quickly, and that's one of the nice things about it. But that's something I learned from him. I've many times found locations. I was photographing in a cemetery during Day of the Dead in Mexico once, and there was an old lady sitting in front of a tree with her rosary beads and her daughter kind of sitting over to a side. And they had come and placed flowers on the grandfather's tomb there. And I knew that that was an interesting photograph, but I was waiting for something else to come into it, and suddenly a little boy came in and just kind of crouched down and almost laid down on this tomb that was nearby, and just the contrast of the little boy, the old lady, the other woman, the flowers, and the grave scene. But I waited about an hour for that to happen. And at first, when I was standing there, they saw me, they saw the camera, and they were, you know, wondering, you know, what am I up to? But as Cartier Bresson was able to do, after a while, people just forget about you. And I always remember that he put black tape on the shiny parts of his camera, mm-hmm. just so people wouldn't notice him as easily with a reflection as you know, coming into the scene. So I haven't done that, but still, sometimes you wait a long time, and sometimes your legs get tired, but you just know that something could happen, and sometimes it does. Sometimes nothing happens. You end up going home empty-handed, but it's worth the wait. And that photograph of in Trinidad of the two women talking, little boy, to me, it's one of my best shots. And it took time. It took time for the two old ladies to forget about me. And then the little boy, of course, he's facing the other way, but still, it was an effort to get that and worth the wait.
Yeah, you're a very patient guy. You must be a hunter or a fisherman, too.
No. So, but hunting is a good term to use in this case, out on the hunt to get a good photograph. Certainly is a good way of describing it.
So you bring up a point here. As a matter of fact, this is what I wanted to ask you about, because you're standing in this place. You're obviously not far away. How do you? I mean, especially you. You're a foreigner. I'm sure you're an obvious foreigner standing there with a camera. How do you? I mean, how do you get these people to ignore you?
Well, it's interesting because it depends on where you are in this world, and if you have a camera. I've witnessed scenes in my 47 years of photographing where somebody tries to take a picture and they get punched out or yeah. chewed out, or you know, they're not welcome. Cuba is a great place to photograph. I've photographed in Mexico a lot. I mentioned that. And you're constantly watching your back there. This is true in Latin America, unfortunately. You don't know what's going to happen, whether you're inadvertently taking a picture of some person who doesn't want the picture taken, and they might take huge offense, you know, could get you killed. But in Cuba, people are friendly. Nobody seems to care. I did some portraits there, and I would ask people when I got up close, and that was fine. Nobody objected. Even some of the people says, well, can I get a copy? And, you know, so it's a great place to photograph, and it's a beautiful island, and it's a land of paradox. You know, the political history there is so fascinating. I actually lived there when I was a baby. My father worked for Procter & Gamble, and we spent 9 months there. I was only 4 months old when we went, so I don't remember anything about it. But I heard a lot of stories from my parents, especially my mother, about the extreme poverty there next to, you know, opulent hotels. And this was the life of many Cubans at that time. And then the revolution happened, and a lot changed. Public education for everyone, medical care for everyone. So that changed dramatically. There's still a lot of tension on the island politically. So that makes it a fascinating place to go to photograph. And getting up close to people. Well, you know, in my early work, if you look at to me the early work, it's often me on the other side of the street photographing because I was nervous about approaching people. But after I became confident in making some good photographs, I wanted to get closer and closer and closer. I started out in 68. By the mid-70s, I was doing a lot of portraits of people. I did a whole series on Skid Row in Los Angeles. And I was in the Hotel Chaplin. I got to know people there. I did portraits in their rooms and out on the street. And then I got interested in the music scene, the punk rock scene in Los Angeles after a trip to Ireland. I met some of the punk rockers over there. And I said, well, I want to find out more about that in Los Angeles, which I did. And I got very involved and went on tour with this band called X. And there's a lot of portraits of members of the band in there and some work of audience and the areas that I went with them on tour. So I'm pretty comfortable at this point approaching a scene, talking to people if necessary, asking if I can photograph them. But I also love the whole concept of candid photography and just kind of hanging around, you know, the camera's hanging by my side and just waiting for something to happen and then just lift that camera up and get the shot, Cartier Bresson style, when everything comes together. So I work both angles there.
Let me ask you this. What are you shooting with now? Are you using smaller camera or especially when you're doing street work like this?
Well, I've always used a Pentax brand. When I got that Spotmatic in Japan, Nikon cameras, they had a few others, but the Spotmatic, Pentax Spotmatic, just fit in my hand so nicely. I like the weight of it, and I don't know, maybe it was the price. I think I paid $55 for that camera with a lens at that time, something in that neighborhood. I just like the feel of it, and I wore out that camera after a while, and I always went to Pentax. Just always liked it. And so about 7 years ago, I got my first digital Pentax, and right now I have a K50 with a couple of zoom lenses, one mainly that I use all the time. Not all the time, but I don't use the telephoto hardly ever. I just have it. So I'm working with just a basic one camera. I still have a Pentax film camera, which I use on occasion. But mostly now I'm shooting digital and occasionally convert a color into black and white, but mostly I've been exploring color in recent years, and I like them both.
What's not to like? You know, it's all good.
Yeah,
it's all good. Hey, let's talk about Cuba some more. There's a lot of interest nowadays in going to Cuba now that it's opened up to U.S. citizens. I know you've been there many times. What can, you know, if somebody wanted to go to Cuba to photograph or really just to travel, I mean, how would you recommend they go about it?
Well, at this moment, this will probably change. You can't go to Cuba if you're an American citizen to be a tourist there, to go on a tourist sort of a trip. You can only go through a licensed delegation, which is an educational kind of a trip. In 2012, I went to Cuba with Witness for Peace. They are an NGO that does tour, educational tours, not only of Cuba, but South and Central America, Israel, et cetera, Palestine, that part of the world. And I signed up for this delegation, and we all met in Southern Florida there. That's, my mind just went blank. What's the name of that town?
Well, Miami.
Miami.
Probably Miami, yeah.
Yeah, Miami. So we all met there, and then the next day we all flew to Havana, and we were met by an old school bus that had U.S.-Cuba friendshipment painted on the side of it. And, you know, we went to the Martin Luther King Jr. Center, which is where we stayed during most of that trip. And that was a great way to go because it was a way to get to know mostly Havana and learn a lot about what's happening in Cuba. So I did it that way the first time. And then a couple of friends I met on that trip, and I decided we wanted to go back and we wanted to explore more of Cuba. So we went through the back door, basically. We flew from Denver to Cancun, spent 3 days in that area exploring the ruins around Cancun. And then we flew over to Havana and we met this fellow. His name was Jorge, and he had a car, and he's a tour guide. So he took us in his car to some cities out of Havana, and we only spent a couple of days in Havana with him, but we went to Trinidad and Santa Clara and Cienfuegos, a few other towns. During that trip, his car broke down twice, so we ended up having to catch other rides, but a lot of people have cars there, and it's, you know, taxis are inexpensive, and so we did that trip on our own, and then we flew back into Denver and went through customs without any problem. And then this last time I went by myself. Now that was this past May, and I also flew to Cancun, and then I spent a night there, and then I flew to Havana and met Jorge, and we rented a car this time, a newer model car, and we went to some other towns that I had not been to. So at this point, I've covered about two-thirds of the island, perhaps, and I want to go back. So there's several ways to do it. But the point about this last trip that's important is that when I came back through customs, they only wanted to know if I had brought back cigars or rum. And I said, well, I have five cigars. So they sent me to secondary inspection, and the guy says, how many did you bring? I said, five. He said, no problem. You know, I even wrote down on my the documentation that I'd been to Cuba, and I got my passport stamped twice coming in and out of Cuba. They don't really care at this point. As long as the Democrats are in office, the door is open. And, of course, Obama has opened the door even further. So hopefully that will continue. Hopefully they'll get rid of the embargo. Congress is the only entity that can actually eliminate it. Not sure if that's going to happen anytime soon, but certainly anybody that wants to go to Cuba can pretty much do it, not be concerned about anything other than bringing back too much rum or too many cigars.
Well, that's not too hard.
Right. Yeah, they tell you how much you can bring back, so you just don't bring more.
Yeah. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. I came across the Canadian border once in Buffalo, and we bought like an extra bottle of liquor. I forget how much you could bring across. And it was a Sunday afternoon. Right. The Buffalo Bills were playing. And I go, you know, talk to the custom agent, and he goes, so what did, you know, what do you have? You have anything to declare? And I said, yeah, I do have an extra bottle of liquor, you know, maybe an extra case of beer. And he goes, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I'm sure. You know, I wanted to be honest. He goes, are you really sure? And I said, well, yeah. And he got mad because he wanted to go back to where he was and watch the football game and said he had to go inside, fill out this paperwork for my extra bottle of booze. Stupid me.
I
should have taken his hint. Whatever. So,
oh, yeah.
But anyway, back to Cuba. One thing, a lot of people are going there to photograph, and because, you know, there's all the old cars, and at least from our perspective, it's unspoiled, at least unspoiled by the U.S. And I just came back from Europe, and lots of places are just jammed with tourists all the time, which, you know, of course, I'm a tourist too, but it spoils it for,
right.
It can spoil it just because there's just too many people there. And I can see that happening in Cuba really fast if the walls just keep tumbling down. And what do you think? Do you think that's pretty likely to happen?
Well, it will to some degree. It's not like all Americans are suddenly going to descend on Cuba, which would be impossible. The problem in Cuba is the infrastructure just cannot support a lot more than what they are already getting, because people come from all over the world. It's a very popular destination for Europeans, South Americans, Central Americans, Canadians love it there. There just aren't enough hotel rooms for an invasion of Americans to fill. What I did on the last two trips, which is an option that we took because we wanted to. We stayed in people's homes. It's a system called Casa Particular, and Cubans are licensed by the government there to provide accommodations and meals. And it's a great way to meet Cubans as opposed to, you know, at the airport or just on the street. You get to know them. They're very gracious. The food is fantastic. They give you more food than you can consume most of the time. And, it's just the best way to do it. Of course, you need to have a tour guide like Jorge, my friend who took us on that second trip, and then me on the third trip. He had connections. He knows people wherever we went. He'd already set up casas for us. And they were amazingly inexpensive, on the neighborhood of $25 to $30 a night for a room. And meals were $3 for breakfast. You get more food than you can eat. Fruit, eggs, bread, you name it. Lots of good food, coffee. And then dinners are in the neighborhood of $5 to $7, and it's a complete meal. All you have to do is get there, and then you got to have, you know, some connections. A lot of people don't want to do that, though. They want to stay in a fancy hotel, and they want to, you know, ride around in an air-conditioned bus, or they want to feel safe. You know, there's just too many myths about traveling in places like Cuba to make people take the really safe way to go. I'm the opposite. I go, you know, I want to get the real flavor of a place that I go, and I want to stay in, even run down hotels. I've done that just because they're more interesting. Over there, staying in people's homes is a great experience.
Yeah, I think that would be wonderful. I mean, me too. When I go someplace, I want to know what it's really like there, not just, you know, do a drive-by and take a quick look and move on.
Oh, exactly.
So let's take a look at some of your photos. Particularly your Cuba photos. I mean, they're just really compelling. And it's funny you talk about Cartier-Bresson, and I can see a lot of his influence in your work. When I look at the one photo called Cobblestone Football, the boys playing football. It's a fascinating photo. I'm assuming you parked yourself in front of that spot for a while. But
I did.
You know, the way you captured the one ball in motion, well, not in motion, he must have had a pretty fast shutter, and the one boy is, he's completely off of his feet as he's running to go after the ball. But enough of me talking about it. What can you tell us about this photo and how it all came together for you?
Well, soccer, also called football everywhere in the world except the United States, is very popular in Cuba. And I saw kids playing it in Havana and other towns. I was staying at a Casa Particular in Trinidad, Cuba, right down the street from where the cobblestone football photograph was made. And I noticed that after school, in the afternoons, the boys would converge on this location where the street was pretty flat, although it's cobblestone, and they would bring their balls with them. And if you look at the photograph, you'll notice there are four balls in that picture, several which are in motion. Three of them are in motion, actually. But I noticed that, and so this particular afternoon, I sat on the curb on the other side, and the background was great. I really liked that, and there was all this action, and the kids, at first, they saw the camera, oh, taking my picture, all this kind of stuff, which is, you know, typically happens. After a while, they forgot about me, and they just went on with their game. So I shot a number of frames before I actually got that particular one, which captures, yes, all the motion on the street, the balls, and some up in the air. One kid in the background is tossing it up, and then, you know, a couple of them on the street, and then there's one kid just got his foot on another ball. It's just one of those things when you're photographing action, you need to make a lot of frames before, and hopefully you'll get one that where all the elements come together and, you know, there isn't something in it that you don't want. So, that's how that, photograph is made. And it's actually, been entering it in competitions, and it's won twice now. One of which was Los Angeles Center of Photography members exhibition, juried exhibition, was the winner in that competition. And then in another one out of Italy that toured around Italy for a while and a couple of other countries. So it's a popular one.
Yeah, I could see why. Which contest in Italy was it in? Do you recall?
Well,
I was just a juror in one a little while ago. And
yeah.
I would have remembered that if it was in that one. I'm sorry. I'm stepping on you there.
Yeah. No, that's okay. I need to look in my file here to
that's
remember
okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's all right. Don't.
I'll come back to that if I find that information. You know, there were a lot of winners in that particular competition, and so in any case, it's here somewhere.
All right. Well, let's take a look. I'd like to talk about two more in your in your Cuba portfolio here, and there's another one called Card Game. And again, it's just where a number of elements just come together. Obviously, patience pays. And it's a gentleman playing cards, and a woman walks into the frame with an umbrella in front of her face. Maybe right. She's hiding from you. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Did you notice that the artwork on the umbrella is a nude woman?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, from the waist up, bare-breasted. That caught my eye, of course. I was standing there and watching the guys play, and all out of the corner of my eye, I see this woman coming with this umbrella, and she had that umbrella in front of her the whole time. From the time I spotted her until she went all the way past me, it was like she was going to go. There was a shady spot right there. You know, it's like when the sun is just on the other side of the building, you have pretty good lighting in the space. But she came out of the light and into the shade, and then she was going right back out into the light. So it was, you see a lot of women using umbrellas in Cuba just to, so that they don't get sunburned, or they just want to protect their skin. That sort of thing. So, she came into it, and she was gone in a flash.
This looks like it was taken with like Kodachrome, or
colors are interesting, aren't mm-hmm. they?
Yeah, they're very interesting. Yeah. Did you do anything in post, or is that just how it? That's just how the light looked at the time.
It's pretty much how the light looked. I think I did a little bit of color correction on it and improved the contrast just a little bit. But beyond that, not anything else. Mostly what I do when I look at my digital images, and because you can clone. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a piece of trash laying in there that's really a distraction, I'm going to get rid of it.
Yeah, I don't blame
you. No qualms about that. And that's pretty much what I saw and what the camera caught.
Hey, you're the photographer. It's your work. It's not like you're a journalist or something, you know. I don't blame
right.
you.
Right.
Let's look at one more here that really caught my eye, and it's right below that in the in the gallery. It's Che at the job site. It's got a guy with a picture of Che Guevara on his shirt. And mm-hmm. It's a portrait, so you're...
Sure.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, this is a situation where I was walking down the street. That's the big square in Cienfuegos, where the big park in the middle and a lot of big buildings around this square. And I came walking by and I saw him at first, he and the guy he's standing next to, they were taking a break. There was a construction site there. In Cuba, you see tourists wearing Che garments, from T-shirts to hats to whatever else. You know, it's very popular among tourists to buy these things. And you don't see the locals wearing Che shirts that often. But here's a guy who was working the construction site, and the shirt is faded. The color of the shirt's interesting, or the fact that Che is kind of a pink color. And then there's some splattered paint on the shirt, and it's, you know, it's a work shirt, basically. But it's been washed a bunch of times, so it's kind of faded. That caught my eye. I thought that was very interesting. And the fellow next to him, I thought they were interesting guys, because those are the colors of skin in Cuba. People are black, or they're kind of honey-colored, their skin tone. And so I spoke to them for a minute, and I asked in Spanish if I could photograph them. And they said yes, and they did the typical thing of smiling. I say, mm-hmm. no sonrisa, por favor, which means
yeah.
please don't smile. And right away, they, okay, sure. And then in that shadow area, this other guy came stepping out, but he was still in the shadow. And so he's in the photograph too, because I saw him. I wanted all three in the photograph. And what I like about the picture, other than the fact that it's, you know, the Che shirt and the contrasting elements of skin tones and all that, and light and shadow, is that, there's a seriousness there. They all have each one of them has their hands in a different way. That is a photograph that I had to do some work on to get it to bring out that shadow detail. It was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the original file was difficult, so I had to do a fair amount of work on that to get it the way you see it.
Yeah, and you had the guy doing the old fig leaf thing.
Yeah.
Which is pretty typical. That's what most people do when they're posing. No, I love it. Yeah, so you had to do a lot of work to get that, bring that guy in the shadows out, huh? It doesn't look like it at all.
I did.
Yeah.
No. You know, what you see is not what the camera always sees.
Yeah, oh, that's for sure. Oh, yeah.
As far as all of those technical aspects. But I love the photograph. And when I first, downloaded it, and I liked it, but it was like, you know, I've got to do something about this. And then I actually went and had a print made at Photographic Works, which is a business here in Tucson where they do black and white and color printing, and, mm-hmm. and they're real good at it. And the print was just not good. So I really had to work at it, and it's still tough to get a real good print. It looks good on the website, and it looks good on my computer screen, but to get a real good photograph, I actually ended up getting a really good photo, getting a good print by doing a replay on a quality paper.
Mm-hmm.
So it came out. I'm very pleased with that. You know, they had to do extra work. They just couldn't just do a quick print.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, you'd really need to work with someone who's an expert at making prints, I think. So, that's really cool. Well, let's shift gears real quick. I want to talk about one more here, and we'll go back in time, almost to the troglodytes here. So we'll. I know you already talked about one photo from your 1969 1984. Yeah, but the very first one. So we'll include the protest photo too. But the very first one, I just keep coming back to it. Called the Rose Parade Spectators, Pasadena, 1976,
mm-hmm. and. Right.
Just, you know, you've got this guy off on the right, and, you know, he's much smaller, he's farther back than the guy in the foreground, but he's almost ghostly in a way. So what can you tell us about this one?
Well, I went to the Rose Parade that year to photograph the crowd. That's what I like doing. You know, it's a Cartier-Bresson kind of a thing. He was great at that. Just thinking of that one photograph made in London of the King's procession or something like that, where you got these people standing and sitting up on this hire, and then there's a guy laying in all these newspapers on the ground, like he's passed out or something. I just love that photograph. In any case, I like, and I've done this many times, of going to events, instead of photographing the event per se, photographing the crowd. And so I was walking along, and I came to this spot where there was this building that had a kind of a high ceiling to it. And outside, the sun was blazing against this white wall. So it made it into a totally white space. And the man on the left is standing on a chair so he can see above the crowd. The man on the right was kind of pacing back and forth. You know, he'd been smoking a cigarette, and then he would kind of come in, and he would try to kind of look, and he couldn't see through the crowd, so he would kind of walk back. But he kept coming, and then I just thought the contrast of those two, the way they're dressed, the way one is above the other, and then you've got that angular ceiling coming in and that white space behind. I thought if he would just come in and get real close to that other man, even maybe their fabric is touching or something, that would make a good photograph. And it did. He, you know, sooner or later, after I waited for some time, he came into it, and that's the photograph.
Yeah, your patience pays off again. You know, I wish we had time.
It took quite a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm not that patient, so I'm really glad to see the results of being that way. So, you know, I wish we had time to talk about more of your stuff. You've got so many great things on your website, and I encourage everybody to go look at it. We're going to have it on. We'll have a link in the article, so folks can go look at look at your work, mm-hmm. and beyond what we'll publish in the magazine, and I encourage you to do it, because I think any of us can learn a lot from what Michael's done over the years. It's like going to school, I think, and what you've done. But before we go, I want to talk to you about this calendar that you've come up with, because I think it's so cool. I mean, go. You just tell us about it. I won't even babble on about it. Tell us about it.
Okay. Well, a little bit of background. In 1982, when I was photographing the music scene in Los Angeles, 81 actually. This band that I've been photographing was called X, and one of the lead singers is named Xene. And not only is she a songwriter and a singer, but she's is a really good artist and was always making art. I went on tour with them twice, and she was making collages. She was drawing. She was always a very creative person. And I had this idea that I would like to do a calendar that featured my photographs, one of which was a group portrait that I did of the band. As well as other photographs I'd done. I was experimenting with xerography at the time, so I would go to this print shop in Santa Monica, and I knew the manager there. I used to go in after hours, and I would put a black and white photograph on the printer, and then I would fiddle with the dials. It was a thing that was happening. I noticed around Los Angeles promoting bands that were playing, where they would take a photograph and they'd make a poster and they'd, staple it to a telephone pole, or put them on in windows of places. And so you had this very high contrast concept of being applied to photographs. And I liked that. I thought it was interesting. So I started playing around with that. So I asked Xene if she would do the graphics for a calendar I wanted to do in 1980. And she said, sure. So I came up with lots of birth dates, like you see in this 2016 calendar, musicians, artists, political figures, dates of interest from the beginning of time to, quotes and various things. And so I put together a kind of a mock-up of the calendar, and I gave it to her, and she copied all of the information onto 12 different sheets that were the same size as this calendar, and then, did the back with the credits page and that sort of thing. And, I had it printed, and I marketed it around Los Angeles in, music stores, and even the L.A. County Museum of Art bookstore bought lots of copies, and I printed 250 and sold them all. So it went very well. I did another calendar with her the next year, and then I did a book type calendar for 84, and I did a couple of calendars that were about blues music, blues classics. And I used album cover artwork for those. Then I moved to Arizona right after that. So I didn't do calendars for a long time. But in 2010, I noticed that the 1982 calendar and 2010 matched up day for day, month for month. So I revived this idea of the calendar that I'd done in 82, and I used all photographs of X that I'd done, but they weren't xerographs, they were photographs, and marketed that to their fan base, because the band is still playing, and sold a bunch of those. And then since then I have done some calendars that are about humanitarian work that I've been doing, photographing what I call the migrant trail here in southern Arizona, working with humanitarian groups around the desert, try to save lives. And so I've done those for several years. And then I entered this contest. LA Center of Photography had this street photography competition, which I entered. And a photograph that's in the calendar for October was one of the winners. And I contacted some of the other winners and asked them if they would participate in producing a 2016 street photography calendar. They agreed, and I started putting together all the information, did a lot of research coming up with the quotes and birth dates. There's over 100 birth dates of great photographers in here. And then the resources, which is in the back, First Street Photographers. So had those printed, and it's out and about now.
Wow. And so how can people get one? And, of course, we'll have a link in the article. But
Right, yeah. But on my website, there's a link right there that secures the cover of the calendar and information. Just click on that, and it goes right to it, and it tells you how to buy. When you go to that section, there's a write-up about the calendar and a list of the photographers and their work, as well as some information. And then you can purchase it through PayPal with either a credit card or PayPal account, or send me a check. And that's how it's very easy.
It sounds really easy. So is this going to become an annual thing?
Well, I have a lot of I've got a lot of these calendars to sell, so we'll see.
That depends. You know,
I've been doing these calendars in recent years since 2010. I did a calendar in Tucson with Tucson photographers called Tucson Photographers Shot Rock and Roll, and they were all rock and roll images. And it was not much of a hit in Tucson, so I lost some money on that one. But I've done, I've either broken even or made a little bit of money on some of the others. My goal is not to make money or get rich by any means. It's to share the wealth the work. So I'm hoping that this will be successful and that I can do more of this. And it may not be necessarily geared towards any competition like this one was. It might just be some of my favorite street photographs that I've come across, either on your website for Street Photography Magazine, or come across in other ways. So time will tell what will happen next year, but right now, or shall I say in 2017, right now, got these two to promote.
That's great. That's great. I hope you sell them all out in a week. I hope you go into your second and third printing.
Well, it's interesting. I just typed in on Facebook, I typed in street photography, and it's all these sites. And some of them have like tens of thousands of followers. I was shocking. I mean, one of them is like 27,000 people have indicated an interest in street photography. So I started posting there, and I haven't gotten an order yet, but I just started doing that. So,
hey, keep it up.
Anyway, we'll see.
I know there's a lot of interest in this art form. So, and it's still a little early in the year too. We're recording this mid-October.
Well,
so,
of course, Oh, sure, November, December is always the best time for actual sales to occur.
You ought to know. You've done it enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Michael, so tell us what's your web address so people can find you?
It's just michael-hyatt.com.
And you spell it H-Y-A-T-T, right?
Just like my hotel.
Just like your hotel. This is your sideline. All right. Well, I can't thank you enough for being with us. I really appreciate you taking the time and telling us all about your work and how you did it.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Bob. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and be a part of your great magazine.
Well, thanks again. Okay. Well, the pleasure's all ours.